silver like it was stones. Mm-hmm. Silver. He made it like it was stones, Jerusalem. It was that common.
Yeah.
So one was against the other. If we saw one in vanity about it, everything we took up because it's vanity. Then he says on the other hand, but anybody who has never had two pennies in his life may not agree with him. But after he says that he's a king and he made silver like, so he's contradicted himself.
Well, I want to point out that silver, money, wealth, power is worthless unless you dedicate it all to Hashem. Then it becomes worth great deal. So that same book, Kohelet, begins with that verse and ends, he goes into all the different philosophies and outlooks upon life, Weltanschauung, as you say, which human beings have followed and continue to follow today, and points out everything is vain, has no meaning, and there's soft davar kol nishma, when you've heard everything, that's the end, when then you recognize et elokim yirah et mitzvotov shemo kizeh kol adam, you have to fear Hashem, but have awe in front of Hashem. Yirah shema means really developing a conscience. You've got to develop your conscience, which is the voice of God in the breast of every human being, and observe the commandments which God has given us, which also come through the conscience as well as through revelations, because this is the whole of the human being, the meaning of man. That's it. And sometimes you only come to it by recognizing that everything in the world is like a vicious circle, leads you nowhere. Except Yirat Shamayim. But now I tell you, I'd like to what's your question?
I had a comment that,
he was
virtuous in one aspect of money. His father, David, had collected a lot of money to build the temple. And unfortunately, there was a huge famine in the land. So instead of taking the money to buy food for the people, he said that was going to be for the temple. So when he passed away, Shlomo didn't use any of that money to build the Israel.
To see something, not Saracha.
Not on. Working?
I think it's on, but.
Now, I'd like you first to look at the top of this page which I distributed. Good morning, everyone.
How is the moon?
The top of the page here, there's the following quotation from Kilat Yaakov, is the father Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, who was a brother-in-law of the Chazon Ish and was regarded as the greatest saint of the previous generation and scholar also of Yaakov Kamenetsky. Yaakov Kanievsky. So, here there's a quotation from what he said. But our subject has been the birth pangs of the Mashiach, which are strongest during this period, which is the period where we, unfortunately, every year of our existence, almost we've had the worst persecutions. So it said like this, we are surely very near to the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, of a righteous Mashiach, because we've already passed the majority of the birth pangs of the Mashiach. And the main aspect of the Chavli HaMashiach were in the Second World War, where we had to go through unbelievable, terrifying suffering. So, we're clearly in the time which is referred to as the ikras of the Mashiach. We already see the tracks of the Mashiach. Those who can read the Gemara, would you look at that? I put a piece of paper inside, near the end, of the way in which, at the end of Gemara Soito, there's a description of the ikras of the Mashiach, epoch of the Mashiach, or better, ikra means the tracks. Here's another small Gemara, but I'm going to bring you directly in English. And the Gemara says like this, the ikras Mashiach in the period which should precede the coming of the Mashiach, called the heels, and refers to the final period of exile, when Mashiach hasn't come yet, but signs of the imminent arrival will be discerned, as those approaching footsteps are already audible. Or Eka Bahia means the lowest extremity of the human body is a synonym for the end. It denotes the end of the period which will usher in the Mashiach. What's the first significant, we say, negative experience? The first one is chutzpah. That means insolence will increase. In fact, chutzpah doesn't need translation. You'll find it in every American dictionary. Nearly all. Chutzpah is a special type of aggressiveness, insolence, which has affected the Jewish people's
unmitigated gall.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say that in American slang, it's actually a positive term.
Yes, can I ask you please to wait with your comments and questions? Then, it's another aspect is the costs will soar. That means life will become very expensive. There will be a lot of poverty. And this is a reference, as we'll soon see, these qualities, they apply specifically to the life of the Jews in the land of Israel. And today, unfortunately, Israel has reached, I think, almost the world record of, according to ratio of population, of poverty in Israel. There's so many under the poverty line. That's what happened. It says the vine will yield its fruit, but it will still be expensive. Why? Because people are engaged in drinking parties. Alcoholism spreads. Also, other drug addiction, the addictions will spread. You'll have a plentiful supply of grapes, but it won't be enough to fill the amount of wine and other substance abuse. There's a malchut te'afek lemila, the government will turn over to heresy. Some say, what's the reference to world governments at large, many of them are not based upon service or belief in God, but more particularly, most commentators apply to what's happened in the land of Israel. I mean, that Israel should set up a government on a declaration of independence where the name of God is more or less banished, or used to be, sometimes a bit better, but they did not allow it to come neither into the national anthem, they're not allowed to mention his name, although Americans and British don't mind, they took it from us, to mention the name of God in the national anthem, and also the declaration of independence, but Israel, they refused this. When people said, why can't we put in? Because God has given us the ability to put up a state with the help of God. Oh no. So, that's heresy. It's taken over. And certainly, if you bring an example, which I know from my son, who was in the American Army, when the president came to visit his battalion, where he was the chaplain. So my son made a blessing, also in English, and then the president said, yes, we believe, this is the motto of the army, for my God and my country, my God comes first. That's America. And here in Israel, because somebody wants to give his the head of the brigade, wasn't a chaplain, wasn't one of the rabbis, and he wanted to give them a message, you're going to battle, remember God. So he was criticized by members of the government for it. So that's Hamalchut Havet Leminot. Ve'etochachat. And there's no people to rebuke others, or people to take notice of. No one will be able to reproach another, because all men will be iniquitous. When a sinner is admonished, he'll retort, you're no better than I am. What, you think you're holier than I? You're just as bad as me, if not worse. And then it says, furthermore, that ain't tochachat, some say, means there should be no bearers of truth. They'll be unable to demonstrate the falsity of heretical views. The next situation is that the Galil would be destroyed, northern part of the Galil, it suffered a great deal, and the Gavlan will be desolate. So, it might mean that the name of the place, Mis Gaval, we also said, they left out one of them here, Beit Tochacha, Beit Vadi Lizmus, Liznus, the erstwhile meeting place of sages will be used for harlotry. That means, in the times of the Mishnah, and this is from right from the times of the Mishnah, and also shortly afterwards, the study halls were built outside the towns. When they decline the Torah study, they fall into disuse. And the isolation makes them favored locations for illicit affairs. Sinners were so brazen, they'll openly designate places of immorality. And it's well known that you should know about it, but for some people, you know, there are areas in Tel Aviv or Yafo known as Sin City. It was the image of Herzl in the Judenstaat, Jewish state. We should establish a state where there'll be also prostitution, there'll be crime, and there'll be theatres and circuses and so on. In other words, we should be like all the other nations are, in different areas where morality is flourishing. Something's been underground. And the next thing is that what about this Galilee? These were places which on the border of Eretz Israel, borderline in the north, Golan, other areas. Then it says, and the people who dwell on the borders of the land of Israel, they'll be driven out from the borders, and they'll go from one place to another, and won't be able to say, and they won't be helped. This is exactly what happened to Gush Katif. Gush Katif was one of the successful borderline levels of Eretz Israel Jews, and the border is always the most attacked area, and they were previously attacked, but they survived. They were strong, they were courageous, they were attacked by people from Aza itself, and unfortunately they were driven out by force, even by the Israeli government. And since then they found really no settlement. That is 10 years since it took place. And there's that big survey. You'll see in the many of the papers, the interviews, people were driven out and they're trying to settle. They've not recovered. They're taken from place to place. Often they had a good source of livelihood. They worked very hard, the greenhouses and other things. And they had beautiful synagogues, good places of learning, educational facilities. And they were very courageous. You know, in fact, one of my cousins who was in was there, was one of the people there, he used to fast Monday and Thursday we've prayed all the time to that it should be protected at the time when they were often attacked, but they held out in a strong way. They kept the enemy at bay, and he was hit by a bullet in the head. Baruch Hashem managed to recover. Went through a lot of suffering. But truth, there were so many tragedies that have occurred, and the most fertile and productive area, and also productive in the population that was there, they're wandering around in different parts to try and settle down. Exactly what it says here, this was declared almost 2,000 years ago. Then it says, and truth will be absent. The border will be attacked intermittently at various points, so that the inhabitants of the border towns are driven from town to town. Then it says that the wisdom of scribes. Scribes is a name, as you know, for Talmidei Chachamim, called Sofer, Ezra HaSofer. He was just a scribe, he was the leading Talmidei Chachamim generation. And so their wisdom will go down, even if they learn a lot, but many of them don't have wisdom. V'yireh chet yimasu, those who are frum, who are afraid of sin, yireh tachet, they want to do good. They're despised, people make fun of them, they mock at them. Why do you have to be people? They mock at people who try to keep away from sin. Where emet and truth will be absent, because falsehood will rule. Both the falsehood of all the nations of the world against us, but also in our own area, there's too much falsehood amongst the Jewish people. And there are too many swindlers and people who deceive others. Young people will put to shame the elders. They'll make fun of the elders who generally have more wisdom. And even the elders will have to stand up in the presence of the minors, which is, there's a huge generation gap, and the young people will demand honor from the older people. And then it says, Ben Menavela, Bat Kum, Ve'ima, Bekala, Bechamuta, the son will deride his father, and the daughter would stand up against the mother, daughter against the mother-in-law. The enemy is a person for his own family. As we know, also in Israel, there's often an enormous amount of family quarrels, strife, which is well known in the time of the kibbutzim. There were battles between the older ones and the younger ones, fought against one another. B'nei ha-dog b'nei ha-kelev, the face of the generation is like the face of a dog. They'll become shameless, because dogs are known to be shameless. But the fifth generation are the affluent, who want to have compassion, and not give enough to those who are poor, like dogs that refuse to share the meat they have scavenged. Another explanation is that the leaders are basically demagogues. In other words, the face of a dog is that he looks with his face to his master, which way the master wants to go, just to look at his face, but the dog always wants to leave. The dog goes in front, even on the leash sometimes, so he leads the way. So the dog leads the way, he just looks which way his master wants to go, and that's the way he goes. So the Pnei Hador are the leaders of generation. The leaders are not really leaders. And especially because of the type of democracy we have. They always have to look, what do the people want? If the person wants to get leadership in Israel, you get the largest party, then he makes some sort of a survey, and you might see, well, the largest party, they are left-wing. Okay, so I'm going to put myself as a left-wing That's going to be my platform. Yeah, because they're the largest groups. So I'm going to be on left wing. There might be another one and say, well, you know, the largest group might be even a bit religious or traditional. So therefore, I'll also, on my platform, I'll be traditional. Or they'll find the largest group of right wing, and, you know, they'll make their surveys and so on. So otherwise, they don't have a view of their own. They follow the master. Who's the master? The people who elect them. So therefore, they are dog even now killer. How can you be different to the dog? That's exactly what the dog does. He goes ahead. He's leading the master. But the truth is that the master is really the one giving directions. And he is the leader who gives direction. A son is not ashamed in front of his father. Upon whom can we rely? We can only rely upon our Father in heaven. You'll see this on many stickers. Ein lam lishayin el l'avinu shebashamayim. Stickers on cars and other places. 15 negative qualities that will take place before the Mashiach comes. And that's to do what you mentioned yesterday, a generation that is totally collapsing, evil, with all sorts of negative aspects in its society. 15 qualities. To those you find here at the end of the Gemara. So, the truth is, when it says we should only rely upon our Father in heaven, there's an interesting comment that the person who learns this and reads it and he sees it happening, then he's going to say to himself, what can save us? All the different so-called democratic, sociological, political and other solutions for the rot, say there's something rotten in this society. How can we remove it when rebuke doesn't work and when morality is being ignored? What can help? Having trust in Hashem. You've got to have trust in Hashem. And he's got to pray to Him and fulfill His will. That's one explanation. The other explanation is, when a person says, the only one we can rely upon is Hashem, that's behind Volozhin, the Altar of the Gaon says. That in itself is also a bad quality. Why? Hashem wants us to change. And that's why you find that straight after this prize, shortly afterwards, there's brought here in the Gemara the Mesilat Yesharim, the path of the just. Very juxtaposition is important in the Rambam, it's extremely important. In the Gemara, which is like Gemara is always discussion of subjects that goes into the stream of the consciousness, they call it. In other words, things are put together on a deeper, even a subconscious level, rather than being strictly in the right order. The strict right order of all the principles of the Talmud are given in the Rambam. He creates an edifice to transform the subconscious, semi-conscious stream of the inner wealth of the oral tradition, and that's why it's an oral tradition which is questioned, at least has to lead to a discussion and a debate. And that's why I just saw an email yesterday. Somebody sent an email, what's going on in Korea? Unbelievable. You know what's going on in Korea? South Korea. They're all studying the Talmud. Yeah. Why? Because they're very keen on education. They all want to become geniuses. And they read the analysis. Why the 23% of the Nobel Prize winners are Jews is because of the Talmud. They want to understand what lies behind it. It's because of the Talmud. Either they learned it, or their parents or grandparents, great grandparents learned it, went to their genes. The power of being a genius. To have higher IQ than can be achieved anywhere else. they found out, they did research, found it comes from the Talmud. And therefore, it's spreading like wildfire in South Korea. First in Japan it spread as well. So, now I also understand that I wrote certain articles in the Lochite Code, and someone, I don't know who it was, someone sent me a few translations, a few languages, including Korean. In any case, it says straight after this passage in the Gemara, it brings the Path of the Just. Now, the Path of the Just is a book developed by one of the greatest saints, and also one of the greatest Kabbalists of recent time, Moshe Chaim Hatzatu. But he based it on the Talmud. Well, the Talmud says, it says in the Chumash, when you go into the battle, whether it's the battle, in fact, the battle with enemies want to kill you, and when you're going in the battle of life also, we all have to struggle in different ways, v'nishmata mikol davar, you've got to keep yourself away from every evil matter. If you try and keep yourself away from every evil matter, you'll be able to overcome and reach a high level in the struggle of life. And then there are almost 15 steps to reach from the beginning of being careful what you do and studying Torah, different levels of saintliness until you even come to Ruach HaKodesh. That comes straight after here. In other words, if you see that the society is crumbling and there's so many negative elements around, what you have to do, you have to say to them, don't just rely upon Hashem, no. You've got to learn Musa. You've got to learn ethical instruction. You've got to strive to reach saintliness, which is the real purpose of Torah. And then you've got to work hard, okay? But regard it as a challenge. You're fortunate enough to be able to look what it says in the written Torah and to have heard in ancient times and more recent times also to read in all the books of the oral tradition. So go and concentrate upon Musa. And that will solve the problem. Otherwise, build up saintliness. No case. Wasn't easy for Abraham Avinu when he began this whole mission to bring blessing to the world by being a partner with Hashem. So, sometimes we're put in such situations. Today, might be a small group, but that small group can save the world. So that's it. So therefore, what Rechaim Hoshman said, don't say you can only rely upon Hashem. Hashem wants you to be his partner. So therefore, go and teach the world the mitzvot were given. Don't be false, because all part of the false is that people have put on religion as a camouflage. Inside, they want to go and become very rich and very powerful. So outside, you know, they dress themselves as a big rabbi, or they make miracles, and all sorts of things they put on. But inside, they're rotten, and they're spreading rottenness. So that's a part of the difficulties, which we have to try to remove. We've got to quite, as we explained yesterday or the day before, concerning two levels of the Brit: the external Brit and the inner Brit. So now, we spoke here. Before I go on with the next piece, perhaps you've got any questions.
This is from Simcha Brunim of Pascha.
Yeah.
It's more or less like that. It says there will come a time before the arrival of the Redeemer when there will be scholars without Torah, Hasidim without piety, nobles without money, summer without heat, and winter without cold, and crops will grow without rain, irrigation. In other words, there will be a generation of externally, but which lacks the inner content even in their physical world.
Very good.
So yes.
What's the question? Is that
it's a statement. It's by Simcha of Perstakia.
He is really basing it on all these statements in the Gemara. Yeah.
I was going to actually say a few comments. One, the conflict between the elderly and the younger is actually more personified in America between baby boomers, who are now the elderly, who used to fight against the elderly, and the younger generations who consider them hypocrites. And you have in also in the countries like Korea and China where they're studying the Talmud, they should be careful, because we Jews are freedom-loving people and they're very authoritarian societies, you know. And the Talmud might start, you know, making the people want more freedom.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I was in an old time, the first came.
Yes.
French.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So they had two missionaries, man and a wife from South Korea. That was their job. Then they had a woman, a young woman, who was an American from Germany, and a woman from Canada, who was also. I don't know where she can learn from that.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, I want to, I've given you each a sheet. You should follow this sheet, those who follow a bit of Hebrew, to see the amazing prophecies going back again, almost 2,000 years. And these are traditions preserved in the name of Rabbi Ishmael, who lived at the same time as Rabbi Akiva. And you know Ishmael, because of his namesake, I suppose he was keen to know all the traditions. It says Ishmael in the end of times will do teshuvah. We hope it will happen soon. The Mashiach will come, will happen. Many of them will do teshuvah. But he brings here 15 things. Now, must I say, these negative qualities are 15. And now there are also 15 aspects which will come from the B'nai Ishmael. B'nai Ishmael is a reference to the Muslim people. This is stated long before Islam came into the world. But there was always a prophecy, B'nai Ishmael. This is Christians. They're going to take over a good part of the world. As is already hinted at in the book of Bereshit. So it says there are 15 things they're going to do. Be'achrit ha'yamim. And achrit ha'yamim is our time. And what are they? Number one. They will go and measure out the land of Israel with ropes. Now, ropes are also used already in the Bible, in the Tanakh, as ways of delineating borders. So they'll go and decide what are going to be the borders of their kingdom, of their nation, of their government. And they'll try to make borders and take as much area as possible from Eretz Israel. And they'll say, you know, the truth is they want the whole land, though the nations won't let them, at least. They want the whole area from 1967. In 1948, when the allocation was to be, there weren't Palestinians then. Then all the Muslims belonged to Jordan primarily, or to other, or Lebanon, or different areas. The border upon the land of Israel, but primarily both the area today known as Israel, as well as the area which is called Palestine and Transjordan, the other side of the Jordan, was really part of Jordan, the whole of it. And those Muslims who lived in the land of Israel, the land of Eretz Israel, called Palestine at the time, they were Jordanian citizens. So then there was by the League of Nations, after it's given over as a mandate to Great Britain to sort out who's going to get what. So there were the land was partitioned in a certain way, and the Israel accepted the cutting down of the area which we know as Eretz Israel. They objected, but they accepted it. But the Arabs didn't accept it. The Arabs went against. And when the state was established according to the borders given by the British mandate, the Arabs attacked us. And at that time, the Jews were very weak. They didn't really have armies. The small Jewish brigade came from abroad. But, you know, as you know, 1948, there were terrible battles. And in the end, there was an armistice agreed, and we came to the 1948 borders. So a few years later I came here, in the years when those borders were there, and, you know, you couldn't go to the Kotel. It was all part of the Jordan, that belonged to Jordan. Yeah, but here in Yerushalayim, in many areas you would see the Jordanian legionaries aim their guns where you were. It was easy. The closest place you'd go to Har Zion, that was in our area. And from there you could see a little bit the old city. That was the situation till the then there were the till there came the Six Day War. To the Six Day War, we managed to get better borders. But the 1967 borderline was the one which gave the Arabs enormous abilities to prepare destruction of the Jewish state. Then came the Six Day War, and we got new borders. But a great deal. This is what it says here. The first thing is, the Muslims want to take over as much of the area as possible. Then it says, how do they do it? They make graveyards, which are holy places for the Jews. They like to make them places for pasturing the sheep and for putting rubbish there, in order to strengthen their power over the land. And that's what's happened. They took over, for example, the place of Shechem. In the Middle Ages, they took over the area of the Kotel and made it a rubbish dump, because they didn't want the Jews to come there. And the truth is, even today, that they've taken over the place of the Mikdash, now Moria, but they're throwing in the rubbish dump any artifacts that demonstrate a Jewish presence. They won't even deny that there was ever a temple there. And even today, to find artifacts, I saw an advert, if anyone wants to go into it, that they're giving opportunities for people to help in excavating. They have to excavate where the rubbish was thrown out from the excavations that the Muslim did on the Temple Mount. And amongst that rubbish, there are many artifacts which are from the period of the First and Second Temple. And they found all sorts of things there. Because the Muslims, they're trying to destroy their presence on the Mount. They say this is the place, as we say, the place where Ishmael is, the holy place for the Muslims, not for the Jews. Then, that's the second thing they do. The third thing is they make special measurements upon what's going on the top of the mountain. That is, the mountain, they try to possess mountaintops, which are strategic points to have to occupy in order to rule the land. From mountains you can more easily, it doesn't just mean mountains, it means that they want to get rulership over any strategic point from which they can destroy the Jews. Also, in order to gain power, they use falsehood. They tell all sorts of lies. For example, today we see they're telling lies about what happened. They're teaching their children that Israel never existed and doesn't exist. Their maps don't show it. It's all Palestine, only belongs to them. And they're rewriting history on the basis of lies. And that's going around the whole Muslim world. And Muslims, not only Muslims in our area, Muslims everywhere. And they're being nurtured and distorted, just like we see. The peace partner, Abu Mazam, has got a doctorate. A doctorate is to prove there never was a Holocaust. I mean, the negation of the Holocaust, which occurred so recently, and which there's so many records, they keep on increasing. And the living witnesses, if you're living witnesses, and all the other records you've got, and the photos and everything. What to go and... But they say we don't take notes, this is all thought of. In Iran also, the same thing. They rewrite history. I mean, you're going to say MS, and they work on hiding the truth. And also, that's the next one, with MS. Dicha Kotm Israel, and unfortunately, this is also having influence upon Jews. Jews also. Even Jews today, who deny the Holocaust, or shake hands with those who deny the Holocaust. And the Jews today, who are BDS, and I think they're leaders in boycotting Israel, in spreading the false propaganda given by the Muslims, and there are many Jews involved in this as well, because they've also been brain contaminated. Another thing is, the true Chok goes away from Am Yisrael. Yechakok Yisrael, that the people of Israel have become so assimilated to the ways of the non-Jews, also that we don't have such a merit to be in the land. Because most of the Jews, or many of them, they go after the law system and also the values of the nations. And they don't follow the true Chok of Yisrael. Could also include even the Supreme Court of Israel does not follow frequently Jewish principles of law. Even laws that have to do with establishing a moral society. And they have laws, for example, against bribery, but on the other hand, they have laws that support bribery in the strongest manner. And the Supreme Court judges themselves are bribed frequently. How can you have the Supreme Court of judges where they have close relatives? And how can you have a Supreme Court of judges where the judges themselves, they decide who's going to be come into the court? And they've got their own bias concerning that. And they're going to create a state witness who is bribed to go and give testimony to accuse and to reveal crimes of the others. Then it's also a time when, unfortunately, sinfulness grows, because the people of Israel, many of them, don't get any Torah values, education. And therefore, the generation goes down and down. Yiridat HaDorot. I'm not, whether it's a small group, but many Jews, they're not taught anything about Jewish values for most of their life. Then Shanit Olat Katzemet is unusual. Idiom. The smallest thread is the silk. The silk comes from the small silkworm. And the strongest thread and ropes are created from wool. Thick ones. So it says, this is the concept of what it says, chutzpah yazgeh, that arrogance, people, it says, Hashem opens up for every person a foot shall chel chesed. But the chutzpah becomes so strong, people think they're so important the soul becomes so arrogant, and this brings about, this arrogance brings about the negative attitude towards others. And then it says, the paper and the pen are killed, which means all agreements which a seal signed have no significance. They're not worth the paper on which they're written. Well, no. I mean it. Yeah. The Oslo Pact means nothing to the Muslim. The Muslims have a principle that whatever agreements are made, if they don't fit in with their concepts, they can nullify it whenever they want. And then says the currency will also no longer have any significance, lose their value. There's too much inflation, deflation. And then the Muslims, they will build up the ruined cities and settle in them, and they might also use them to go and attack. And they'll take over different sections of the land of Israel. And then they'll go and build up their temple on the place where our temple used to stand. And this was written 1,000 years before the Sultan built the mosque. It's written it. Says they're going to build a temple on the mount, on the Temple Mount. They'll build their temple. And then what will they do? The brothers of the Muslims, they're joined together to become like one. That means there'll be different leaders of different Muslim groups. Each one's got slightly different belief and policy, but they'll all join together to go and take over the whole of the land of Israel, including Jerusalem, and culminating with Temple Mount. But at that time in their days, that is when the Ben David will grow. As it says, Daniel, in their days, then the Melech HaMashiach will arise from this evil will come over the land. There is only a hint of also in Bereshit. That means that Ishmael will try to rule over everything. And the culmination of the rulership will to take over the land of Israel and Yerushalayim totally. But it says, on the Aleihem Ben David Tzmach, on the basis of this lowest point, this is the lowest point, you can say the most difficult pangs of the Chavri Mashiach will bring the Mashiach. So these negative qualities, 50 negative qualities, correspond to the 15 qualities of inner evil which are in the Gemara and Sota. And the concept of 15 is a deep one, which is connected with the 15 Shir HaMaalot. You know, there's at the end of Tehillim, there's 15 songs of the steps. Which steps?
Steps to the Ben David Midrash.
I got it. 15 steps.
There were 15 steps in the Holy Temple, going from between the Ezrat Nashim and the Ezrat Yisrael. Goes between the place where the women stood, women's courtyard, and the men's courtyard, 15 steps. And the Leviim used to sing different songs on those steps. And what's the if you look at the Shi'amalot are all of them connected with how we go through a lot of difficulties in climbing the mountain that leads to Hashem. But our challenge, mi aliv al Hashem. Hashem, when he said, you've got to become my people, it's not easy. The concept, why is the Beit HaMikdash above every place of Yerushalayim? And Yerushalayim is, in Tanakh, referred to always the highest place in the world. And whenever somebody leaves Jerusalem, he goes down. When he comes to Eretz Israel, he's an Oleh. And when he goes from Israel to go and climb Mount Everest, he's a Yored, it's going down. Yeah? Even if he started in the Yam HaMelach, yeah? And now what's the climb from Yam HaMelach, from the lowest point in the world, which is in Eretz Israel. And he wants to make a trip from there to the Himalayas and climb Mount Everest. He's called a Yored. It's going down. Because, spiritually speaking, the Eretz Israel, Yerushalayim, the Mishmash, represent how we can grow upwards and come nearer to Hashem, the Sahar Hashem. And that's the 15 steps in the Shir HaMaalot, all express that. But you find the Shir HaMaalot, all of them have to do with in trouble. I sign out ahead of him, I want to look at those mountains. How you, where's my help going to come from? How you have to always look upwards and work hard at each step to go upwards. So that is why it's also connected even with the smallest name of Hashem, the Yud and the Hay. But I'll explain a bit more next year. So keep these sheets. Keep these sheets, because the deep explanation of this is given here in short on this sheet.
Oh, Rabbi, I was going to say something. I forgot to say was that this time could be considered one of the greatest challenges that we will ever face, and it's only during this time that we become great. Also,